Welcome. This is Lynn Free. This is our Monday night conference call simulcast. And when you hear those little dings in the background, that's somebody coming into our conference call. Hey, would you like to say your name and your city? No. All right. Be that way. It's okay. Some people like to check this out and be anonymous, and that's okay. We, those of you who are regulars, hi to you all. Thank you so much for being regular and helping hold the energy. And you actually make a difference, because if you weren't there, you wouldn't be here either. Hey, this is Lynn. Would you like to say your name and your city? Uh-oh. Another quiet one. Okay. I'm not going to ask anybody. I'm just going to mute everybody. Hey, would you like to say your name and your city? Am I muted here? Did I mute everybody? Let me see here.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves. All callers are muted. All callers are unmuted.
Well, you know what? Whether you say hello or not, the most important aspect of this call is to be present in your spirit, because this is a call that is pretty unusual, I think. And tonight it's always unusual because we have Carla Ruckert as, I'm not even going to say she's a guest. We're both in the same parlor. I'm just the guy that opens the show up, and then it just goes wherever it goes. And we have Terry Brown, and Terry is here every Monday. And those of you that are regular listeners, no, you know that I can cut that out, but I just want you guys to know we're on a conference call. Terry brings through these messages from other realms on these calls, and we have had discussions about anything from how the universe was created to how to get rid of fear. And anyone else that just bonded in, like to say hello.
Hi, Wayne, this is Edna.
Hi, Edna. That's Edna in Indiana, formerly from, is that right, Indiana?
Yes, I'm Indiana right now.
Formerly from Yugoslavia?
No, I was born in Brazil, and I lived in Germany for many years, and I have been here for 10 years now.
All right. I think Yugoslavia. Oh, well. Yes. Anyone else? We're on the air.
Hi, Wynn. This is Jean from South Dakota.
Hi, Jean.
Hi.
How's your headaches doing?
Much better. I haven't had one for quite a while.
Did you do anything, or did something just shift on that call?
Just shifted on the call.
No kidding. All right. This is Wynn. Would you like to say your name and your city?
Hello, Wynn. Francis from Concord, California.
Hi, Francis.
Hi, Wynn. Hi, Sarah.
You know, I wanted to mention with Jean, on our Wednesday call, you know, we do a call on Monday, we could do a call on Wednesday. On our Wednesday call, people ask questions and we answer them. And Jean asked about our headaches. And our sources said, well, they're going to work with it. Now, I never know what's going to happen. But today she says, no headaches since Wednesday, so cross our fingers. This is Wynn. Would you like to say your name and your city?
Buddy Marcus, Columbus, Ohio.
Hi there. Was that Buddy? Not Buddy.
Yes, Betty, B-E-T-T-Y.
Betty, not Buddy. Buddy is a man's name. Hi, yeah. Betty. Thank you for being here. And we have Carla and Terry on the line and a bunch of other people. Anyone else like to say their name and their city?
Hey, it's Chris in Memphis.
Hi, Chris. Is that Chris Blair?
Hey. Yes.
You sound good tonight. Are you just mocking that up, or are you really feeling good?
Well, I don't know. I'm feeling all right, I guess.
Okay. Anyone else want to say their name in the city?
Hi, it's Debbie from Costa Mesa.
Hi, Debbie.
How you doing? Hi, Terry. Hi, Wynn.
Hi. And anyone else? No one else. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Before I mute you guys and put you in your mute box, why don't we all say hello to VBS listeners that are on the internet all over the place. Are you guys ready? 1, 2, 3.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, VBS.
Hello.
Everyone on VBS, I want you to think hello back to us. Just send us, if you want to, send us loving energy, and we'll send it back to you. Are you ready? 1, 2, 3.
Hello, everybody from VBS.
That was scary. Now, no one can say that we're not corny, right? All right. Thank you all so much. I'm going to put you on mute.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves. Entry and exit chimes are off.
Now, I'm going to start the tape over.
Please enter your PIN followed by pound. Please wait. This conference is now being recorded.
Okay. Well, I had announced the topic, but I wasn't sure Carla would go along with it, but she did. And she said, that sounds good. And the thing that Carla, all three of us that are the facilitators here, or the speakers, have in common is that we all have the experience of having communications with voices in other realms, and they talk about themselves, they explain who they are, and other people seem to get benefit by us sharing our communications. And, you know, it's a rather unique thing to be doing this. Now, when I say we're all having communications, I should clarify that I officially don't channel. I use the word channel meaning having a voice from somewhere else that comes through your body and talks through you, and it's an intelligence added or either separate or added to your own that is able to know things, do things that a human can't do on their own. And on one level, this is a phenomena. It's a phenomena. And, you know, some people, when they hear about that phenomena, might think that we're crazy. It's a, you know, in normal consensus reality, people that have voices talking to them from other realms, you probably find them in psych wards. And in fact, you probably go to a psych ward and you find people like us who didn't figure out how to act normal and ended up in the psych ward. So many people have this experience and they don't talk about it. I get emails from people that say, oh my God, I'm so glad you're talking about it because I'm having that experience. Well, you know, when this first started happening for me, I had to make two evaluations. And one, was it really from another realm, or was the person who was talking to me making it up? And the other was, if it was a voice from another realm, who was it, and was it positive? And then once I decided that it was from another realm, it was positive, I had to ask myself, well, how does this work? How can other people benefit from these kinds of communications? And that's the topic of our conversation tonight. And although I am not a person that directly gets voices, Terry, who's on the line, does get voices, and Carla gets voices from other realms. And we all get different voices. They all identify themselves and explain themselves slightly differently. We've all had to go through our own testing period, I think Carla did. I didn't ask her ever this, but, you know, is this valid? Can you trust it? Who is talking? Could I be making it up? First, Carla was in a trance. So if she was making it up, it was not her conscious part making it up. And many people, I think many people who first are exposed to this idea of channeling or voices from other realms have a great deal of anxiety about it. Like, is somebody going to tell me what to do? Is somebody going to take me over? What if there's this voice that comes through that knows everything? Are they going to start bossing me around and take control? So it's hard. How can I say this? In general consensus reality, there's a resistance to the idea of this happening, although there have been a number of breakthroughs into consensus reality. Maybe one was Jesus, I suppose, was getting voices from other realms. And in modern times, Edgar Cayce, Conversations with God, and Carla Ruckert is one of the most respected and precise and accurate and articulate channels, and she's been doing this for 30-plus years, and she has a website where she has posted literally thousands of her communications. And if you ever look at her website and start reading these communications, you will see that the intelligence that speaks through her can look at the history of mankind and very precisely talk about almost anything with total, I want to use the word omniscience, but total viewing of that event as it actually was. And it's really fascinating. Now, what is the value to get this information? Carla, why don't you just share anything you want about all of this and help get the ball rolling?
All right. When Wynn asked me about tonight's session, he said that they'd sort of like to talk about what changes or what a difference channeling has made in my life. And I thought about that, and bear with me while I take a walk through memory lane, because the answer isn't short, but I think it's sweet. I was born with a lot of gifts, more than my share, I'm sure. When I was a little girl, I danced and I performed and I was considered professional. And that came to a screeching halt when I discovered that on my toes bled. And as my teacher said, what do you expect? You're landing on a block of wood. And I said, that really, really hurts. And she said, well, that's the suffering that you do for your art. And I said, that's not the suffering I am going to do for my art. So age 14, there went one career down the drain. But I loved to sing, and I collected old folk songs, and I collected Irish poetry, and I wrote my own poems and put them to music, and I had a fellow that played the guitar with me and sang with me, and we were professional after a while. This was back in the early and mid-60s when coffee houses were in all the fashion, and we ended up being asked to open for Peter, Paul, and Mary on tour, so we were pretty good. And then I discovered that this gentleman, who was my starter husband, did not like to sign autographs, and when push came to shove, he did not sign the contract to open for Peter, Paul, and Mary. He put up the guitar, and I was left with the shambles of a marriage because I had married the guy because it was the only way I could go on tour with him. He was hard-shell Baptist and felt that we would be sinning if we went on tour and we were not married. So here I was married, which is not something you take back easily. And not singing, there went that career down the drain. I think probably that one would have lasted better than any other. I was also good in school, and people kept telling me, oh, you should be a professor of this, a professor of that. Unfortunately, I could see right through that. Intellectual discourse is largely the relating of point A to point B to point C to point D, and after a while it just gets abstruse and you can relate a giraffe to a wingnut and get away with it, and it's just not that interesting to me. So I settled down and became a librarian, which I loved. I dearly loved that. Now, all this time, I had been meditating with a group led by Professor Don Elkins of Speed Scientific School, Professor of Mechanical Engineering and Physics. He was also a paranormal investigator back in the day, back in the mid-50s, 1960, before anyone else really took it seriously. He was going to seances, and he was talking to Tom Edison via a channel in Chicago, and he was talking to J.B. Ryan in North Carolina, and he was flying his small plane around to talk to people that had had UFO experiences, and MUFON would call him or one of the other UFO networks, and he'd be off, and he'd be investigating. And he had done a good many regression hypnosis sessions back before birth just to find out whether reincarnation was accurate or not. This kind of very far-flung research. He had found, in 1961, he had found a fellow in Detroit by the name of Walt Rogers who had a UFO experience of the psychic kind, not a close encounter of the physical kind. It happened he was looking at it as if it were projected on his bedroom ceiling. But he began getting information, and it was spiritually oriented information, which Don found was almost always the case if there was information with a UFO sighting. And in this information were instructions on how to create a UFO contactee group. And Don decided he was going to create a grand experiment. So he asked his 12 favorite physics students, I was not one of them, if they would form a meditation circle and meditate silently once a week. And I was at the time a freshman in college, and I was looking for a silent meditation group, and I thought, perfect. So I said to my future starter husband, ask Elkins if I can sit with you all. And he said, okay. And Elkins said, okay. So I began sitting, and within 6 months, everybody in the group except me was channeling. And the information gathered was precisely in line with the information Don had seen before. And he was very happy with the experiment. It continued for 12 years like this. I didn't particularly want to channel. I've never wanted to channel except to be of service. Okay, fast forward about 4 years, marriage ends. I'm back in Louisville, and Don asks me if I will learn to channel. And I just would have done just about anything for Don. By this time, I was over my divorce. Don and I had moved in together, and we were hand-fasted, which was as close as the man ever came to marriage. He wasn't what you'd call a real ordinary guy. Did not like the idea of providing a cave for the she-bear. So we had an understanding, and we were very happy. And he says, Alrec, which is what he called me, he said, I need to carry on with this experiment, and I think you might be able to channel. If you would do it for me, I'd appreciate it. Well, what could I say but yes? And it took me about 2 months to get started. For a long time, I was not getting it. And then one day I did. One day I got it, and we were off. And Don began to think, well, we've got something here. You know, she's a pretty good channel. So he started recording me. Meanwhile, I, being a librarian and a researcher, was very interested in doing a better job. So I started what is continuing to be a lifelong study of the genre called channeling or spirit communications. That's a library term. And by golly, I discovered some things about the channeling that made it better. Never accept a fear-based question. Never accept a specific question that has no spiritual content. And I also found that it was best to tune myself as if I were a radio tuning to the right station. Big knob, little vernier, you know, get it just right on, and that's my highest and best me. Then I would ask for the source that came in the name of Jesus the Christ at the frequency that I had tuned to. And so I began getting a variety of energies and did a lot of channeling like that. So I began to discover almost immediately that there was a huge interest in these spirit communications. And for the first time in my life, I was feeling as though I were of service, really of service to people. The people that are close to my heart are people that don't have a church. I've always been very lucky. I have stayed with my religion since birth. I was born into the Episcopal Church, and it's very understanding of mystics, so I've never had to leave it. So what I really cared about, though, was that I was so aware that most of my friends couldn't take religion as it was given to them. And so they were needing to create their own spiritual life. And they found the channeling that I was doing helpful, and the questions that they asked were very inspiring, and it just kind of built on itself, and I was suddenly, this is about 1976, 77, I was suddenly receiving letters in the mail. And then when email got started about 10 years later, I began receiving emails daily thanking me for my work and asking me please to keep it up. And in 1980, I got the contact with those of Ra. And as Wynn said, I did that in trance. It's the only trance channeling I've ever done, and I really wasn't good at it in that it took a lot out of me. I was just a mere shadow of a woman there for several years while that was going on because I lost a lot of weight at each session, 2-3 pounds at a session. Apparently, I didn't do the ectoplasm right, and I was taking it out of my body. Anyway, what changed when I came to the channeling was that all my gifts melded together, because in channeling, you're receiving infinite concepts, and you have to sort of roll them out flat and stamp out a translation. You miss a lot. No matter how hard I try, I always miss a lot. But what little I can get is enough to make a resource for some people, and that has been true ever since. And it has always been my hope to be of service. So it isn't that my life changed dramatically because of the channeling in a spiritual way as much as it focused me towards a career that is certainly not remunerative, or at least it hasn't been for me. I put everything up for free. I don't try to make money out of it. But I just want to help people with resources if they want to create their own spiritual path and create a rule of life for walking it and really try to become, as Dewey Larson called it, an ethically oriented human being. So it's really given me a lot of peace. I've never gotten to the point where I actually enjoy the channeling. It's hard work to get tuned up properly and to focus during the translation process. But what it offers me is infinite, and that is the feeling that I'm helping the people that I love, which is everybody, who are trying so hard to create a life of dignity and worth and freedom from confusion and fear. And the material that comes through me seems to address that. And so I'm very thrilled to be right here, right now. And you see, all the music, all the performance, all the dancing, shall we say, all of those gifts of grace or wit or whatever have come together so that you don't hear the dancing, you don't hear the singing, unless I'm giving a presentation and I sing. But, I mean, in the channeling, you don't hear that. But it comes from the same place as those gifts and is part of creating a message that's as good as I can make it. My goal every single time is just to do my best, 100% my best, and give it an honest whack, you know, give it a good try. And then whatever happens, happens. It's certainly not something you can plan aforetime. And I really like questions when I'm channeling that I haven't heard until just that last minute when it's put on the tape. This is the question for tonight. And because it completely frees my mind from thinking, well, should I say this or should I say that? Or I don't have to worry about that. I just have to let go once I'm convinced that I have tuned myself. And then I challenge the spirit very, very carefully in the name of Jesus Christ and ask them to say that Jesus is Lord. So once all of that is done and I've got the contact that I feel is my best and highest, I just let go. And whatever happens, happens. Of course, if it happened really, really badly, I think I'd probably stop it because I am a conscious channel most of the time. As I said, the raw material was the only material that I ever went into trance for. So there you go, Wynn.
Well, thank you. You know, I noticed that I had a couple thoughts run through my mind when you were saying that. And one is, if you ever need to earn a side income, you could probably teach people to do trance channeling who want to lose weight. There's probably a big demand for that. Although they probably wouldn't want all the side benefits or side effects of it.
The other thing
that crossed my mind was that there's a couple points of common reference that we have. One is I followed that same singer-songwriter period that you were aiming to be in coffee shops. I was in coffee shops and playing music all over the place in that period of time.
Now we're showing our face, Gwen.
Yeah. And then the other thing was that in the way that you and I or our sources approach the idea of bringing information through, we have something in common which is somewhat different than a lot of other people who channel. And one is that our sources seem to want us to ask questions rather than to lecture us. And there's a unique quality in that, and I asked myself, why is that? Because when I was first having this experience with Daphne, I was just thinking, well, I'll just lecture, I'll put it up on the internet, and my job is done. But I realized over time, this is my realization, that one of the reasons it was questions and answers is because through the mode of questioning and answering, there was a dialogue, there was an exchange, and there was more of a co-creation involved than just having a source say, okay, here it is. And that over a period of time, for me, that co-creative connection and the asking questions and trying to understand how things work has really expanded my own view of reality beyond anything I could have dreamt of in my furthest imagination. And when we talk about the benefits of paying attention to these kinds of channeled materials, and I think when we talk about channeling, we'll talk about the channeling that Grau experiences and I experience, and there's many other channels out there, and I'm sure many of them are doing really great things, but I can only speak from my experience. And, you know, there's a part of a human that wonders if life goes on and how it all works and why, how does this realm work and why are we here? And history has made, had so many people write books about this, theology books, philosophy books, and now suddenly you're communicating with a source that has actually been around through all these epochs of history, has actually watched us through all our past lifetimes, or can tune into that if they haven't specifically watched, and they understand how it works in a way that a human could never understand it directly. And I think that when one listens to this kind of channeling over a period of time, you tune into the love of the channel, you tune in to this information, and the information tends to wake up cellular memories. Because there's all, if all this is correct, we all have lived many, many lifetimes, and we have no memory of that now consciously. But we do have it at a cellular level. And when the right information comes through, suddenly there's something inside that goes, aha, that's it. That's the missing link. And it's not coming from a human who the best they can do is research everything and try to put it together or write up their theology text and how they believe it works. It's coming from a source that actually sees us from the place where all these other things are just trying to figure it out. They know it. and they're wise. They know the mistakes we make. They know how we make mistakes. And they can give not only the cosmology of how things work, but they can give the wisdom on how to correct, modify your own behavior so that you can accelerate your own evolutionary path. That's how I see one of the ways that I see this channeling to be of an extreme value. But you can't approach it like a dilettante. You've got to study it, you've got to pay attention to it, and you've got to find the right thing to pay attention to. Which, if you pay attention to the wrong thing, you may not get the best information, and you may not get the wisdom, and you may get misguidance. So the first thing you need to learn is discernment as to how to tell whether something's coming from the right place or the wrong place. And the other thing is, and I learned this from Carla's Raw Channelings, that this idea of mixed polarity. Any channeling can come from the most positive high place and suddenly have a little insert that's not from that place, that sneaks in and gives misdirection. And it's coming from either a negative source or the mind of the person. So you can, even in spite of all the positive benefits of channeling or studying channeled material, you can never, ever let go of your scrutiny and your discernment, because otherwise you're giving up your power. And things that are really valuable, they empower you. They don't unpower you, dispower you. So my experience of the work that I do and the work that Carla does and the people that are connected with it, that are being influenced by it, are learning to have more sense of empowerment and more sense of experience of connection, real connection with higher dimensions. And Terry, are you there? I don't hear you, Terry.
I was muted.
I figured that.
Can you hear me?
I hear you. Why don't you share your experience of all of this under the context of the banner, what's the value of channeling? What have you learned from it, being a person that does that?
Okay, there are several things that come to mind. One of the first things that comes to mind is that what Carla described as her experience with channeling is very similar to what I experience when there's a question. I don't like to hear it beforehand because as soon as I hear it beforehand, I think these thoughts, like, I have no idea what the question means. I have no idea what that word that was in the middle of the question is. And then I agonize over it. So I would just rather have the question when I'm connected with my source because they seem to just come through with the answer. And I don't agonize over it, and there it all is. I would constantly surprised by some of the things that come through, and sometimes I have a conversation with them. I'll give you an example. Like the source said that the loop current had stopped in the Gulf of Mexico, and the reason, one of the reasons, was that the Gulf was too cold, and I'm sort of conscious there, and so my own thought is, well, that I thought if there's oil in the Gulf, that would warm up the Gulf and it would be warmer, so it doesn't make sense that it's colder. And then they just come through and they say, well, the it's colder, this oil has sunk to the bottom, and it is definitely colder. And then afterwards, in this one case, I went in and I checked on the internet to the satellite temperatures of the Gulf, and the Gulf was definitely colder. So I feel when they're coming through that there's an intelligence there that is broader than me, and I don't really have... I mean, I'm delighted, which is watching the processes and watching how they, it's almost like I become a remote viewer and I see things, and it's been a little hard for me sometimes because they come through as something like, they say, well, we see a big dome, and inside the dome there are places to sit, there's benches, you know, and I'm still getting used to it, and I go, well, how do I know that there's really a dome there? And there's people on the call that know that town really, really well, and how do I know that there's a dome there? But I'm trusting it more and more. I challenge it when it's something like that. And so there's some pauses sometimes in my channeling because, like, I'll challenge it. I'll ask them over 3 times. I say, you know, well, you know, could you repeat that? What did you say? And it's like, well, there's a dome there. And then, well, could you repeat that again? What did you say? Is there really a dome? Yes, there's a dome there. And if it comes through 3 times, then I say it. So that's similar in a way to the challenge that Carla gives. But what I've found is that this has brought through a source of love light that I have really, it's so pure that I have not really experienced that before. And as I do these channelings, I get the information of what it is like to be in some of the higher densities and to not be in the duality of things or the effort to make a living and to have that orient a person's feel. It's like it's just really pure there. And so it's really expanded my spectrum of what I can see, and there's a whole world that I really, you know, have forgotten about, because I think I once came from there, and it's reestablishing a home for me, and it's like an intense period of growth, and so that's a little bit about my experiences and how it's helped me.
Thank you. You know, one of the things that I have learned, and the people that have been particularly attending our Sunday grid healings, and we do these sessions every Sunday morning at 10 a.m., and this has been going on for a few years, and it started out one way, and it's been growing and growing, and it blows my mind what it's become. Because it started out, the first time we ever did it was just kind of a happenstance where Daphne and I were in New York City, and we got the idea of going to the World Trade Center and calling in the light. The calling in the light is the process of invoking a vortex to the higher realms and clearing the space, and it's become a regular event on our conference calls. So we were calling in the light, and usually when you make the connection, something shifts inside, and you can feel a change in the energy. And we kept doing it, and we couldn't make a shift. So that night we did a channeling, and I asked about that, and I said, you know, we were already holding conference calls. And I said, what would happen if we got our conference call people on the line with us? And we went back and we called in the light with everyone on the call. And they said that would be a great idea. So we did. We went back to the World Trade Center, and we probably had about 10 or 15 people on the line. And we called in the light, and the energy of all the people was able to it felt like the shift occurred. And this was an entirely new concept for me, that a group of people could change the energy in a particular space and clear the energy. So we started a program of doing it every Sunday, and people would go to an area, and we would call in the light, focus the energy on that person, and they would feel it. And we got the idea that maybe we're helping to clear the energy in that space where the person was. So it became like we had a bunch of people on the line, and one person was on Mount Shasta, one person was sitting somewhere else. And then we would go from person to person to person and bring in energies. And somehow it started to happen that people would show up and no one was going anywhere, and people were just sitting in their homes. And we started doing remote calling in the light. And this was all experimental. I didn't know if this would work. I didn't know, but we would take a problem in the world and we'd get a group energy going between us, call in the light, and then send it to that area of the world. And our sources were saying this was good, but I couldn't validate it. And then we had a couple of circumstances where we did this, and something changed that couldn't have changed. And so now we're doing this every Sunday, and it's almost like, I can't believe we're doing this. But I learned something about the nature of prayer, because really what we're doing is, I don't use the word prayer because I don't like to look like a religion, because it's not a religion. But I started to understand how each human being is a little piece of the universe, And through their own intention, each of our intentions, we recreate life around us to a greater or lesser extent. When you have a group of people creating an intention, it becomes more powerful. And when you have a group of people that are connecting with these huge group soul energies, suddenly a small group is leveraging a huge group, and there's a criteria to this, and the criteria is that it always has to be done for the highest good of all concerned, and it can't violate any free will down here. And so you have to find little places of flow where it's possible to send the energy and not violate that, and our sources won't go with it if that's the case. So that's really a major thing to have learned through the communications. And I don't think if they just lectured me and said, do this, go there, bring a group together, I don't think I would have done it, because I have to experience it on a gut level to see it work. I can't just believe it because they tell me. And I used to be a physics major. I tend to be very skeptical. I tend to challenge things all the time, and I have been constantly applying all of that on these messages, and they stand up in their consistency. It's Carla Ruckert's channelings stand up in the consistency. Over years and years and years, if you read them, you have a consistent point of view, a consistent cosmology, that there's no way one person could even remember all of that to keep it consistent over such a long period of time. Carla, you want to say anything?
I think, you know, it might be helpful at this point to say that one of my favorite channels in the world, Barbara Brodsky, when she first wrote me and said, you know, I became deaf as a young woman because of an infection that I got from my baby boy, and I had not heard anything for 3 years, and then all of a sudden I began to hear a voice that called itself Aaron and said that it was my inner guide and that it wished to help me achieve realization. So I began asking Aaron questions. And I'm very concerned, she said. You know, I'm a professional sculptor, I'm well educated, I have a great career, but I'm being pulled towards doing this channeling. We ended up, by the way, doing a lot of co-channeling, and the book of our co-channeling is coming out next summer. It'll be called The Aaron Kuo Dialogues. So Barbara said, how do I know that it's real? Well, I read Barbara's channeling, and it was excellent. It was beautifully positive. It was very pure. And it was very helpful, and Aaron is a charming fellow. He hasn't been on Earth for 500 years, but in his last incarnation, he was a Buddhist monk. And Barbara, in that incarnation, saved his life, and so he achieved realization at that moment and decided he was going to stick with her as an inner guide until she achieved realization. So she said, how can I know all of this incredible detail and richness is not just me going quietly crazy because I've become deaf? And I said, well, Barbara, I said, I tell you what. I said, keep channeling, keep recording it, and after a few years, take a look at the millions of words that you've channeled and ask yourself, could I make this stuff up? And she said that did it for her. She did exactly that, and like myself, she's about my age. We're 67. We're both 67. And at this point, we've both spent quite a few years at it. I've been channeling since 74. I think she began channeling around 1990. But that's 20 years for her and 35 for me. So basically, when you've gotten to a certain point with this practice and you look at the harvest of it. You don't worry anymore about is it me or is it Memorex. You just let it be. It's helped some people. It's there. And that's basically my thrust. I produce the stuff. I make it available. And then it's tough on me that I have to accept the love offerings of many people who write in or come to our gatherings and just say thank you. So the great thing about the spiritual search, whether you do it within the arms of an established religion or whether you're pretty much creating your own path, is that the one thing you cannot do is prove anything. When you contact spirit and you're genuinely seeking, you set up a resonance between yourself, your inner self, the self that you have in common with the Creator, and your surface personality. And that Creator self that's within you is right in your heart, is pulling for you, loves you dearly, and wants nothing but your good. So there's a feedback, and you get this resonance going, and you think, oh, that sounds good, and you start reading that, and then you see something else, and it resonates, and you follow the path of resonance. And as you do so, you open the gates of spirit. Now, spirit doesn't work linearly. It works intuitively. So instead of being able to say if A then B, if B then C, if C then D, QED, this is correct, which you can't do, you say, I had this thought, and then I saw my totem animal. I had this thought, and then the song on the radio repeated that thought. I had this thought, and I got confirmation from a street sign, the lights on the highway going out, who knows how it happens. But resonance sets up synchronicity. And so you're off on your own journey. And you can become subjectively confident that you're on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
And you could keep deepening that confidence as you continue following the path of resonance. And as you build your intelligence, you become comfortable within a new self that is as much Creator self as it is surface personality. And that's a wonderful comfort and a wonderful peace of mind that just comes to you because you have unlocked, as Ra said, the gates of unknowing. And the key mm-hmm. to unlocking that gate is some form of silence, usually, just becoming silent, focusing in the present moment, and allowing yourself to tabernacle with that Creator self within. So
Carla?
When somebody else says, prove it to me, you can't. You can only be sure for yourself. You'll have to let that other person make his own journey. Yes, Lynn?
We're out of time. It's
6:52.
One of these days, this is 3 hours. There's a bunch of people on the line, and I was going to say if anyone wanted to gain how they've grown through paying attention to channeled information, maybe we have time for one person. We're extended over, but let's see if I open the line here. If anyone,
all callers are muted. All callers are unmuted.
Okay, the lines are open. Does anyone have a quick sharing of what they've gotten out of paying attention to either my channelings or Carla's channelings or both?